Hello, Sagittarius, and welcome to your 2022-23 Astrology Studio, formerly known as the Birthday Reading. Happy birthday. If you are Sag rising, happy sun in your first house. Thank you for brooking the delay with this reading this time of year. It's very difficult to predict my schedule in any way, and I've been up to my ears in the written readings for the Inner Space series. And interestingly, I'm right at the end of Scorpio and about to do the Sag reading. I'm just going straight through the signs in order this year. And so this conversation, this sort of one-way conversation, it's not really a lecture. I really think of it as a conversation in which I wish you could be here, and I'm happy to respond to your thoughts. Will help me map out the territory for the Sag written reading. There's always a lot to cover, and I'm going to do my best to do something different in the Sagittarius audio. I personally never know what's going to happen any given day, and I ended up spending much of the day on the phone with law firms who were doing roundup litigation and vaccine injury litigation, and I thought, this is a very Sagittarius thing. These cases all involve the higher courts and Sagittarius and the corresponding ninth house, so they're not really the same thing, have this association with the more, let's say, advanced forms of knowledge and justice and spirituality. The ninth house, the house connected to Sagittarius, references things like universities, libraries, the federal court system, international travel, long journeys, excuse me, of any kind. And here we are today with the sun conjunct the great attractor, the most exotic thing in really in any astrological chart. It's the focal point of 100,000 galaxies all seeming to rush toward this gravitational anomaly. I mean, what could possibly, in your wildest imagination, emit so much gravity that it can pull 100,000 galaxies? Galaxies have like hundreds of billions of stars toward it. Well, whatever that thing is, it is in Sagittarius and is one of the reasons I have, drop to one knee and take my hat off to the entire concept of Sagittarius, because it is really a study in cosmology. And among all of the signs, Sagittarians have the sense, I think more than any others, of being visitors to the earthly realm. And those who have not forgotten our cosmic origins. We are living in downright strange times, and times that are very difficult to find, I think, contentment and peace of mind and happiness in. A real number has been done on the social patterns that have evolved, I would say, not exactly naturally, but without too much of sudden intervention prior to the events of the spring of 2020, which caused severe injury to many people. And the injuries range all the way from social displacement. I mean, what happened was very dystopian, and so much was intended to lead people to not trust one another and to not trust their mother and their cat. Absolutely ridiculous things like this, all the way out to being harmed by things that were supposed to make things better. And so we are living in this world that I don't think that we have fully come to terms with yet. A lot of that coming to terms would reference things that are so far outside of the ken of normal human experience, and certainly anything that we've experienced in our lifetimes. But I want to acknowledge that, in that there are a lot of hurt and lonely people who have nowhere or no one to turn to, who are feeling alienated, who don't understand this new social order that has emerged in society, where it just, you know, it seemed to me, even leading up to this, that people were walking around wrapped in saran wrap so they wouldn't really have too much contact with others or with their environment. Now that's really been pushed to a whole new level. Let's begin with a kind of a challenge point in your solar chart, or your natal chart if you have Sag rising, which is that for months going back to August, so a bit of August, then September, October, and November, three months so far, and more than 3 months out from now, Mars will be in your opposite house or sign, Gemini. And it does this rarely, but it's doing it now. And when Mars makes retrograde, it's been 7 months in one very narrow angle of the zodiac. And so it is spending just shy of 7 months end to end in Gemini. And so this is in the angle of your chart where you look right at things. The seventh house is what you see when you are standing on the street and you just look around at the world. It can be anywhere. But that's the seventh. And the seventh, classically, is about partners, marital partners, business partners, interestingly, open enemies. This is out of classical astrology. And so all of this is being stirred up, activated, intrigued, provoked in various ways by Mars making this very long, slow retrograde in your relational, in one of your two main relational angles, that being Gemini. And what happens on the 7th, a bit before midnight Eastern time, on the 8th in England and Europe, and probably later on the 8th in Australia, New Zealand, but overnight, for the most part, Wednesday to Thursday, is that there is a full moon in Gemini, the annual full moon in Gemini, and this full moon is exactly conjunct Mars. And so whatever the Mars retrograde experience contains, or is potentially, let's say, holding as a secret that it has not revealed to you yet, or is representing something that you can sort of understand but not necessarily feel or resonate with, well, the moon's going to come through and form a full moon exactly conjunct that Mars. And so what happens when there's a full moon involved as the revelationary event, there can be a sense of exaggeration and a stress point and potentially an anxiety point. This is just in the immediate sense. What I think is so interesting is this is, you know, a feature in your solar return era. You know, there's a different solar return chart for every single day and technically every 2 hours, if you are going to cast your solar return. And in the style that I'm doing these readings, I use a couple of key charts that I kind of scry off of and fill in the story. And I think that there's something quite worthwhile in the message of this full moon conjunct retrograde Mars. I mean, and it is close. It splits the degree by more than 10. It's a tenth of a degree, a little bit less than a tenth of a tenth of a degree would be 6 arc minutes. This is 5 arc minutes away from retrograde Mars. And there is something here about the nature of Mars in Gemini being a kind of a mental vibration that does not lend itself well to any kind of emotional resonance, or let's say confirming emotionally what you are thinking or feeling or what someone is saying to you. And what I read into this chart is that now there is at least a method or an approach suggested, which is to take the words on one level, but then also listen to the feelings on another level and make sure that you're, they may not be levels, but think of them maybe as like channels where there's an idea coming across and there's also a feeling coming along with that idea. And then there's also the feeling in your body while you are listening and having the experience. To notice all of those different types of manifestations, and also to do a good bit of scaling down anything that might seem exaggerated or hyperbolic, or you know, to potentially feels like too much. Like maybe it's not all that, whatever that is. Maybe I need to take this information coming in through my senses and my inner senses and step it down four or five notches to get a sense of what this is really about. And so one of the ways that you do that is you give things some time. So to pause reaction and to encourage a stretched out, measured response, measured meaning like, all right, I'm going to take a week and think about this, or I'm going to check in with myself at the next new moon or something like that, right? And like a metric to set a boundary, and you know, assign a period of time to query yourself and to see how you feel, how your thoughts and emotions change from day to day, and then you get to a point where you make an assessment of everything that you felt and learned and experienced. And this is all by way of cooling off this hot quality of Mars retrograde in the seventh, and the especially hot quality of Mars resonating with the Gemini moon in the seventh. And then in addition, you know, we know that Neptune is involved in this. So one of the filtration processes to put yourself through is, what about this is true? What about this is not true? What do I need to sift out here? And the way that sifting is done in the case of a retrograde, particularly one that makes a series of the same aspect in the case of to Mars, and then also to, well, it's Mars Neptune square, that the truth is not necessarily this thing that jumps out of the box. And when it is the thing that jumps out of the box, it is still equally available to be kind of dismissed as being irrelevant if that's an opinion that suits the person making the evaluation. And so I think that it is better in some ways if the truth is sought in a layering process. You know, in this case would be three or four layers of layering process, where you just go down deeper into your understanding of something until you get to the point where you are standing under in the form of understanding. And so you go all the way into the ground of your experience. And that does not happen in 2 minutes. It does not happen overnight. It is something that just takes time. I'm speaking as a Pisces, and the metaphor that I use for Pisces is, let's say you fill the tub and you add some dye to the water. And if you were to let the water trickle out, or even open the drain and run the water at the same time, it might take an hour or two before the color of the water resumed its original, clear non-tinted state. It might take even much longer than that. And so I think emotions are like that in a way. And the water metaphor is that, you know, though yours is a fire sign and Mars is in an air sign, and the full moon's going to be in an air sign, you know, opposite a fire sign, that there's a lot of water in your charts, and that water is coming through in the form of Neptune being so active this year, because Mars is making all of these squares. And so particularly in your relationships, there is this question coming up over and over again: what is real and what is not? How do I feel and how don't I feel? What do I know and what don't I know? If I shift my perspective slightly, what is my orientation? If someone strives to deceive me in some way, what is the truth that is revealed by that deception? That's a very retrograde Mars square Neptune kind of a thing, right? The truth has a way of being a bit of a trickster and coming out even under extreme situations of total denial or dissembling. And so your situation is not likely to be like that so much, but in relationships, it is difficult to actually know where people stand. And we do a lot of assuming that we know where people stand. We assume we know what their feelings are. And how many times in your life has it turned out, well, you actually didn't know what people's feelings were, but you thought you knew. And then when it came time to have a conversation about it, you find out that there was something different. And also with the retrograde of Gemini and the ever-changing Mars and Gemini and the mutability of Gemini, you get a situation where there's not necessarily one clear explanation or perspective, and where you may need to engage with a level of mystery, a level of contradiction, a level of not really knowing what is, for sure. And there are plenty of situations where you never get that. So this is why you, more than anything, have to be at peace with your own reality, your own self, no matter what anyone else in any form coming through your environment may say or do or think, or how they may feel about you. You have to come to your own understanding of what their truth is, hopefully with as much input from them as possible, but ultimately you decide what is true for you, and there's integrity checks that you can do on that. I mean, under this astrology and in many other forms, it'd be really good for you to have your integrity checking apparatus in place. So one of the keynotes of the coming 5 or so months is that a lot of important planets change signs. The two that stand out are Pluto, which has spent now 14 years in Capricorn, is going to make its first foray into Aquarius. It's going to enter three times. Normally, a outer planet enters the new sign twice after a retrograde. Only it's going to do it three times, because Pluto is now going to be moving slowly in its approaching aphelion, the furthest point from the sun, mode. And so there's going to be a long transition between those two houses, and that's quite a legible thing in your chart. I'm going to get to that after the music break in much more detail. And then additionally, Saturn is changing signs, and the changing signs of Saturn mount the mutable cross. So it becomes very relevant to Sagittarius that Saturn is changing signs, because Pisces is your fellow mutable sign and may be a help in resolving a lot of confusion, emotional confusion, and this lingering sense of insecurity that's very, very annoying to Sagittarians, because Sagittarians, I think, want above all else to be confident horsemen. You know, you don't want to be worried about small things or, am I adequate or something like that. And so Saturn is going to enter the territory where Neptune has been for more than 10 years. Then Mars changes signs, and it changes signs from the seventh place relationships into the consummation and contractualization of relationships, the eighth, which is Cancer. Normally a Mars sign change is not a big deal, but this is a big deal after it spends 7 months in an angular house pushing your trust in relationships generally, and potentially your trust in specific individual people, really out to a kind of a maximum stretch. Mars then enters the eighth, Cancer, moving slowly. It's going to creep through Cancer like it crept through, a little bit quicker than it crept through Gemini, but still moving slowly, a couple of months in Cancer, where you will, I think, get a much better sense of where you stand with people emotionally and what their commitment is to you, as well as what your commitment is to them. And Jupiter is going to do a number of interesting maneuvers. As of today, it's in Pisces. As of 2 weeks from now, it's going to be in Aries. And then as of 5 months from then, it's going to be in Taurus. We're going to have two sign changes of your ruling planet, Jupiter. And you kind of follow the story of Jupiter. It's your personal bouncing ball. It's a heck of a ball. I think it's 1,200 times the size of the Earth. And if the Earth is flat, then it's millions of times the size of the Earth. But assuming a spherical globe, of which is the esoteric ruling planet of Sagittarius. While I'm making Earth jokes, there's a true joke in there, which is that in Alice Bailey's system of astrology, the planet that rules Sagittarius in the esoteric system is the Earth. And that is really interesting, given how cosmic Sagittarius is, right? Great Tractor, galactic center, makes Sagittarius into the trippiest of all the signs. But in this kind of very specialized spiritual branch of astrology called esoteric astrology, the Earth itself, our planet, Mother Gaia, is the thing connected to Sag. All right, so Jupiter is going to change sign several times. That's interesting. I will walk you through those phases. But the exciting thing is, I think, to my eye, is that you've had Jupiter moving through Pisces. This is likely to have you feeling a bit more confident than if the influence is only Neptune. And then for you, there's really nothing better than Jupiter moving through a fire sign. It's going to move through the most creative, bold, expressionist, fun-seeking, self-seeking angle of your chart, which is Aries, for about 5 months. And then it's going to, after it's done with this kind of art and sex orgy and, you know, doing fun things, skiing and, if you can afford it and like it, skiing in January and then, you know, bungee jumping in May, that kind of thing, like any kind of an activity where you do things that are just simply fun, like they serve no other purpose. The fifth has a creative angle, but the fun thing, you know, whatever, skeet shooting, to parasailing, collecting rocks just because you're into it. And then that's kind of a whoosh, 5 months, right? Fire, fire, fire. And then your ruling planet Jupiter stops in Taurus. Well, it's going to be moving all the time, but it's going to spend a year solid, 1 year plus 2 weeks from mid-May 23 to late May 24. So there is a whole bunch of stuff changing signs. And I want to go through these one at a time to give you a sense of some of the nuances and some of the possibilities. So I like to do music breaks in these readings of original music from Planet Waves. And this is the kind of 18th digital sonnet by Vision Quest featuring Jelko. Here you go. Ambient piece number 18 by Jelko. We did several series of these, and with each one, I said, okay, I want even less to happen. Write me music where almost nothing happens. That was the result. One of 22 such results. So it is unusual to have so many planets changing signs in so short of a period of time, particularly the combination of Pluto and Saturn. Now, if you remember, Pluto and Saturn were pretty much the big troublemakers of 2020, in that all of 2020 was about the conjunction of Pluto and Saturn. And when this happens, it's a big deal. And it happened in Capricorn on one time only on January 12, 2020. And then the energy shifts into Aquarius with Saturn and Jupiter going into Aquarius. And that trend of Capricorn becoming Aquarius is going to continue. So why don't we start there? Because that's really the kind of overarching and underlying thing that we cannot go over, through, or around. We're going to have to stand here and experience it. And and it's going to last 21 years. The transit of Pluto through Aquarius last till 2024. Can you hold on? I'm going to just turn off the this little space heater that's just drying the air out too much, and I'm having trouble speaking, so hold on one second. And it's probably a bit quieter. So let's just refresh Capricorn and Pluto and Capricorn for a second. As I always say, Sag is the most out there of the signs. But in compensation for that, universe put Capricorn as the second place of Sag. So second house place, I'll use those terms interchangeably. And in the second, we have a real point of grounding into priorities, into values, into a sense of necessity, into how you feel about yourself, and as well what you possess in the form of your cash assets, your tools, the tools of your trade, movable assets. That's all second house stuff. And so when you put it all together in psychological terms, you get a lot of information from the second about how you feel about yourself. And Pluto through the second is a real bear. It is difficult because it is driving this profound need to be self-reliant, to not be so integrated and invested in relationships and in the opinions of others, but to really stick close to who you are, what you value and prioritize, and how you feel about yourself. And so there have been all of these challenges over the past 14 years that Pluto has been moving through Capricorn that have ultimately had the effect of bringing you deeper and deeper into contact with what is the most important for you in this world and in this lifetime. And it's also done a number, and we've all experienced this, but Pluto in Capricorn has done a number on the general category of what were prior beliefs and attitudes and values, particularly as they filtered and percolated in from previous generations, what I think of as immediate ancestors, not going too far back with Capricorn, grandparents, great-grandparents. And there's a lot of that energy in there. There's in Capricorn right now, there's quite a bit in the realm of legacy from the past. We see this in minor planets, Ixion, Quasar, Pholus, and others, that are calling you to note the traditions that you emerged from, what you were told, what you were told was true, what you were told was important, and then having to go through all of that almost with a spade and a brush, like an archaeologist does. Even though we're talking Pluto, which can have a kind of a demolishing quality, Pluto moves so slowly that after the ground is broken with Pluto, you're going to want to definitely get out the spade and the brush and go down slowly and check the artifacts. And this has all been going on. And then for years. And then Jupiter jets into Aquarius out of Capricorn. Saturn jets into Aquarius out of Capricorn. And the paradigm shift that you're about to go through got a good warm-up. That is to say, moving from an era defined by very intense emphasis on Capricorn and your second house, now more about your ideas, to your relationship, to your community, and to experiencing as a primary, let's say, spiritual learning goal or tool or something, the exploration of social reality in a whole new way that you have never, ever experienced it, because you have never experienced Pluto through Aquarius. The last time Pluto entered Aquarius was around 1777, and nobody knew Pluto existed, so there's nobody alive who consciously ever lived through Pluto in Aquarius. And we can go back and look at history, but that's not being there. And so I think is likely to happen as a result of this Pluto transit, and it's not going to happen overnight, but it's going to happen fairly steadily. And the first months of a Pluto transit are always very telling and are worth aiming carefully, is that you're going to emerge in a very deep role in the way that your actual immediate community, that's the third, right? The third is everyone within walking distance and merchants with whom you're on a first name basis. It's not Amazon. It's not, it's not the, well, it might be, Paul Stamets Mushroom Company in California, wherever, Oregon, wherever they are. But if you have to know them, and that's long distance. I'm really talking about walking distance, 1 hour or less driving radius from you, where you consider home. And there being a very strong emphasis on social activities and business, but it's not merely social activities and business. It becomes a hotbed of your evolutionary growth. And I think of leadership training. I think leadership training is a huge theme right now for any conscious, sentient, loving person. We recognize the importance of leadership, and there's really a severe lack of leadership. There's a lack of willing to set an example. We live in this moment where anything goes, and fuck you for thinking too much, and the cult of ignorance wanting to really assert itself as being every bit as good as the cult of studious inquiry and sublime philosophy that in many ways Sagittarius epitomizes. And so you are not made for the fuck you think too much school of thought. You are definitely not made for the cult of ignorance. It is possible to get dragged back into this. You never know when the con job is going to come along. And so, beware of people who claim to be adherence of science, pitching the flat earth theory in any way, shape, or form. Nothing wrong with the flat earth theory, but we're except the fact that it doesn't really work so good. But it is confusing physics and metaphysics. And so one of the things you want to do is now we're talking physics. How fast should I drive my car on this road? Or we're talking metaphysics. Maybe I can collapse space and time and make the trip from, driving time from New York to Denver in 5 minutes. That's metaphysics. So know your frame of reference and remember the things that may seem very plausible and convincing in one frame of reference are absolutely false in another, and what is dependable in one frame of reference can suddenly fall apart in another frame of reference. So know, when you need a ruler to measure something and when you need a laser to measure something. The third house to me is like the on-air monitor. The third house is how does it say it in the Bhagavad Gita? The mind of the senses, the consciousness of creatures. And I think of this as a third house thing. And one thing that's interesting about your third house, meaning the house associated with your immediate local walking distance or less than 1 hour drive time community where you are on a first name basis with people, highly recommended, is that it is covered by the sign Aquarius. And the sign Aquarius brings a lot more people into the situation than might normally be there. And it also creates a kind of a reality field that makes you very sensitive to the prevailing social patterns. And Aquarius can work one of two main ways. Well, first of all, it tends to crystallize patterns. So you want to watch out for the crystallization of patterns and make sure the ones that are getting crystallized are the ones you like, or you have to alter them before they get too deeply entrenched. And the other two are, and it's kind of the same thing that goes in two directions. The the relationship of the individual to the group and the relationship of the group to the individual. Now, for some evidence of how crucial of a theme this is for Aquarius, which is what I'm telling you is the house of your community. When I say Aquarius, I mean walking distance, under 1 hour driving radius, first name basis, the places where you literally go and shop and give someone money and they give you a head of lettuce, farmers markets and things like this, is involved with Aquarius, which is really a much larger concept than the social patterns of a neighborhood, of a community, of a town. But the highlighting of the relationship of the individual to the group, what is this group trying to do to the individual person? Now, we saw this in fucking spades in 2020 and 2021, where anyone who clicked together with anyone who had a certain idea about what the right thing was then allowed to make all the people who didn't agree with that one idea so wrong, that people might never talk to them again. I never thought I would see a time in my life when it was socially acceptable to not invite your mother to the holiday dinner table where she had come every year for some reason, any reason. I don't care what the reason is. Never thought I'd see that. And so we saw this really twisted dynamic emerge under a very strong Aquarius influence. When we put Pluto there, this is going to increase. And so then we're going to have a situation where where Pluto, which can represent the millions, infuses Aquarius, and the majority is really feeling its oats and wants to just express its power because it can. And then at the same time, there are going to be people who say, not so fast, buddy. Still my life. You don't set all the rules. You have no legislative power over me. And if it means I'm not friends with any of you people, well, go have a good time. Go knock yourselves out. I'm going to find people I am friends with. So this contrast between the individual and the group, I think, is the very essence of Aquarius, along with the concept of pattern formation. So with Pluto, we can be sure there's going to be some smashing of patterns. And make sure you know the pattern that you like, the thing that you want. And you've been through Pluto in Capricorn. You've had this long experiment in gaining an understanding of your deeper values. All right, let's talk about Jupiter. So at the moment, Jupiter's in your fourth house. That's a pretty happy transit with Pisces in your fourth house. Jupiter's there, and that is likely to be giving you a better sense of substance than you have only under the influence of Neptune, which can really make you feel like you don't really have affinity with anyone at all. Neptune, when it is angular, meaning in the first, fourth, seventh, or tenth, can feel very alienating and isolating. The alienation and isolation, though, I have seen are, in a way, an illusion. You might look back on a time under the influence of Neptune when you felt very isolated and look back on that 10 years later and think, wow, I really wasn't so isolated at all. Look at all those people that I met, and I've even still got some friends there. What was really going on? So beware of that odd pressure that Neptune has. Now, P.S., that may be getting its bubble burst by the Mars retrograde going back and forth square Neptune, which is testing your sense of your ability to make contact, communicate with people, to know where you stand with people, and teasing you out of any sense of emotional isolation. Anyway, Jupiter moves on. It's going to enter Aries, and this is a very expressive time. Aries, I believe in any chart, in my observation, in my theory of astrology, is the house where we seek ourselves. It's self-seeking. It's like, who am I? What do I want to be? And so inherent in the concept of Sagittarius, which is the chart that I'm reading, since I don't have your chart in front of me. I'm reading the chart of the sign Sagittarius. That's the solar chart. Inherent in the entire idea of Sagittarius is seeking yourself through creative activity, seeking yourself through sexual experiences, by which I mean the art studio kind of sex and not the marital bed kind of sex, not the, you know, this must lead to marriage, but rather the playful, experimental, recreational, exploration, curiosity-oriented sexuality, and things that are just simply what you like to do for fun, frolicking around in a field naked in a thunderstorm, climbing up a cliff, rappelling down a cliff, climbing Mount Everest, riding your sleigh, whatever the fuck makes you think this is a great life. That's what to do with Jupiter in the fifth house. And, of course, you want to stick a spoon under that waterfall and give yourself some ideas. And it's always a good idea to document along that. Now, speaking of documenting, which I mean sketchbook, notebook, taking notes, photographs, something. Chiron is in this house. And so Chiron has been here now for more than part of 18, all of 19, 20, 21, and 22. So part of 1 year and then four solid years, Chiron's been working through your 12th house. It has been acquainting you with the transformational power of doing these kinds of things, of giving yourself these kinds of experiences, by which I mean all the fifth house stuff, which is the creative, the exploratory, the childlike fun, the art studio, and everything you might do in the art studio. So Jupiter is going to come through. It'll make a conjunction to Chiron. It'll make a conjunction to Eris, a pretty much permanent visitor in Aries. Been there 100 years as of June. It took a few times to get in, but from the moment that Eris was first in Aries till now, it's been 100 years. I'm curious if you've heard that any place else. Here's the combination Jupiter, Chiron, Eris, fifth. Do the shit in person. Have the fun physically. The digital realm is incredibly seductive. It is great fun. There's so much you can do, but you want the tangible human aspect of creation, co-creation, experimentation, exploration, and existence. The caution about digital is that the crime scene of the digital realm is the fifth house. The digitization of the human being is a thing associated with what's happened with the process of Eris making its way through Aries. Chiron's here to clean that up. Jupiter is here to remind you of an experience of your total humanity in this thing that is actually about doing things and having fun. So no virtual trick-or-treating in all of your tricking and treating forms. Do it in person. Let's see how far the music break's coming up. So, all right. So that's going on in Aries. There's a connection between Mars and Aries. So all of that fifth house stuff, that's part of the Mars retrograde in Gemini experiment. And I would propose that there's something about finding the play partners, that you can experiment with in the fifth. And who is man enough to have a box of crayons at all times, right? Who's sufficiently done growing up to enjoy life a little bit. And by the way, this thing, enjoying life, this was really the first casualty of the series of crimes that began to be committed in 22. And I would say that if you want to claim back the loot of your life, the loot is in the form of your ability to do what you like to do and do what you want to do. Okay, so the next little fugue, he calls them, is number 16 from the exact same series. And that's going to start in about 5 seconds. Okay, I'll be back in a moment. This is the kind of fun you can have with digital, but I suspect those bells may have been physical bells, but you never know. There's some very sophisticated digital audio workstation software. They've been synthesizing whole orchestras for quite a while. Anyway, Fugue 16. In the Planet Waves office in my mind, there is a joke, and the joke is the word Sagittarius. Now, I'm the institutional memory for the most part of Planet Waves because I remember all the people I work with way back at the beginning, and our very, very first web developer, I think that the night that he was supposed to be setting up the website for the annual edition, I gave him a pot cookie, thinking he would bring it home, except he ate the whole thing and got stoned out of his tree, and the entire website was set up with this imaginary sign, Sagittarius. However, it works out that there is some unusual connection between Sagittarius and Taurus, and it's another one that seems to be along the lines of like the most out there sign and the most earthy sign. Like, Taurus is just like your clay cups and your mud and your toes in the mud and hugging a tree and being in the woods and eating a good meal. It is the sign of textures and things that are exceedingly earthy. And Sag is, of course, the sign of things like the galactic core and the great attractor. And the two come together for a whole glorious year from mid-May of 23, when your ruling planet Jupiter enters Taurus, and then it's going to stay there for years. There's not going to be any dancing back and forth between the signs, as is happening now, where Jupiter was in Aries, then it backed into Pisces and stayed there. It's going to go back into Aries, that kind of thing. No, Jupiter's going to go into Taurus. It's going to stay there for about 54 weeks. Taurus is your sixth house. The sixth place, sixth house, is initially about service. It is the, in ancient astrology, it is the house associated with the military. In this odd way, everything about the sixth comes back to that. I believe that the medical healing aspect of the sixth, right? You're in the sixth when there's a healing table in the room, comes back to battlefield medicine. The serve aspect of the sixth comes back to conscription in the armed forces. Fortunately, most of us don't have to be in the armed forces, though we may be among the armies of the night here in this world of the information war, where nobody knows who's who. Anyway, Jupiter is going to be in Taurus for a year, and this is a wonderful thing. This is it. This is a time to settle into a work pattern. It is time to take care of your body, to focus on healing that which needs to be healed. It is a time to set your home up with the most you can possibly afford or creatively make in the way of luxuries. Maybe you have a way to have a natural turf lawn growing in your bathroom or something like this, or just nice towels and nice candles and so forth. But to have your home become or contain a healing space. And that would also imply working with good people. Now, good practitioners are people where you feel better when you are done working with them. They're also people who are honest with you. They're people who charge you fairly. They're people who will give you the impression that they are learning something from you. A true healer is never, and I say that word loosely, by which I mean, focused practitioner, assistant in healing, is rarely ever someone who cops a superior attitude over you. It's usually someone who brings some humility and also a sense of benefit mild, right? It's not like you're the most special client they ever worked with, but they value your presence in a way. So you're looking for all of that mutuality. But the thing with Jupiter in Taurus is that it has a satisfyingly grounded feeling to it. Now, Jupiter has no special affinity in the Earth signs, but certainly does as the ruler of water sign Pisces. It is the fiery connection to Pisces, because it has a fiery aspect from Sag and the watery aspect from Pisces. But in Taurus, it is a bit luxurious. It feels good. So this is a time to make your workspace really nice. Among the signs that absolutely need to have a workspace that feels good, principal among them is Sagittarius. Libra is another one where it's very sensitive to its environment and cannot work in an ugly room. Taurus is all about natural beauty. You will never meet a Taurus person who walks out of the house not looking good and well put together, but generally never ostentatious. Always just looking tidy, looking nice, looking attractive. Taurus has that feeling to it. It's together. And so now is the time to get that all that stuff together and to make sure that you really genuinely feel grounded in your space. Now, speaking of feeling grounded in your space, there's a kind of a perfect transit coming up for that. And I briefly mentioned it, and that transit is Saturn through Pisces. That's about a 2.5-year transit. It's not going back into Aquarius. So we're going to leave behind the COVID era with the movement of Saturn into Pisces. And there's a big chunk of it that kind of is going to fall off the cliff with the movement of the gradual transition of Pluto into Aquarius. But I think that Saturn, you know, Saturn showed up in Aquarius in March of 2020. So we've been living with this in some form, for 3 years. And so when we're really going to leave that, whatever that particular form of the, you know, I'm part of the majority, and you can go take a shit in your hat attitude that was just like so fucking unbearable. New change. Saturn in Pisces. So to you, Pisces is your grounding. This is weird. Pisces is not inherently grounded. It is the most ethereal of the signs. It is kind of like tied for first place ethereal with Sag, but Sag has this like cosmic feeling where you can like say, well, the great attractor is somewhere between 250 and 400 megaparsecs in the direction of degree 14 of Sagittarius, whereas Pisces is like, ooh, there's lots of different dimensions here, and oh, my grandmother is hanging out in the room tonight, even though she died in 1985. So Pisces has this kind of multidimensional. Sagittarius, I think, is our dimension. Anyway, Saturn enters this kind of genuinely ethereal, spiritual sign of Pisces, and it stays there for a while. And so this, I think, my take on this, having now, you know, lived through one entire Saturn cycle as an astrologer, that's crazy, is that the thing that you're going to like the most about Saturn in Pisces is that it feels solid. And it's slow. It's not as quick as Jupiter. Jupiter's great. It should go half the speed. Well, that's pretty much Saturn. A little bit slower than half the speed. And so this gives you some ground to stand on. It gives you something tangible to wrap your feelings around. It's almost like think of a huge swimming pool or even a lake with an island at the middle. And it's just really cool because you can go in the water and then you can be on this little island that is surrounded by water. That's going to be Saturn in Pisces. It's also going to give you opportunities to clear up and uncloud yourself from various emotional clouding over situations, and I think will help you tidy up your relationship to your family. And it might also be a time of significant changes or renovations to your home and to the environment surrounding your home. So I don't know if you're a homeowner. I'm not, but if you are, this is a time of either one of two things: settling into your home in a better way, or possible relocation in some way. Saturn in the fourth can have either quality. So it's about the fourth, it's about the home and the four walls. And the key to doing strong fourth house work is to be very adaptable wherever you are, to be able to show up in a hotel room and make that into home in 20 minutes. When I was traveling a lot, I had a little thing that I would do is I had this beautiful pastel cotton blanket I picked up on the streets of Amsterdam from a vendor for 10 euros. And I always had that blanket with me when I was traveling, and it would be the first thing that came out of my pack. And I would cover the hotel room chair with that blanket and make that chair mine and that room mine in a way. And so the more you can experiment with that idea to have home be a fully portable thing where you bring your sense of grounding and your sense of belonging with you, it does make it quite a bit easier to be moving and portable, which is, of course, the One of the very keynotes of Sagittarius, right? That either your home is a youth hostel, or you've spent a lot of time in hostels and can do that thing where get on an airplane on 15 minutes' notice, and 8 hours later you're somewhere you've never been before. I mean, that's just pure Sagittarius, and it's not any kind of a cliche from the books. I test all these things out against the people that I know, and there are always people who exemplify these traits. Now, speaking of things of a long distance travel nature and that which is Sagittarianly philosophical, one of the coolest things happening this year is going to be Venus retrograde in Leo. Leo is your ninth place. The sign Sagittarius is the ninth sign. So here we have Leo being the ninth of the ninth. It's kind of modal in music, where you can make these crazy chord progressions by going like a start at C, go to a fifth, go to a fifth, go to a fifth, and you're writing something nobody's ever heard. So here we have the ninth of the ninth, and that means that your spiritual reality is centered in Leo. Now, one very good thing about centering your spiritual reality in Leo is it leaves you an out for there having to be some kind of God you can only dial in through some guy wearing a frock or a yarmulke and talos or, a great guru. Now, it can also lead you to venerate people who exhibit star quality, that certain something that makes people have star quality. It's the thing that Bono has, but that Edge doesn't really have, and maybe an internal thing, an internal orientation. But there are some people who excel at charisma and being visible and they like it. And then there's other people who want to drop back a little bit. So you want to be careful, full of care, when you encounter people who you are enamored of because of their star quality. Learn how to see it. It doesn't make them a good person. It doesn't make them a bad person. It just means that they have some star quality. What Leo on the ninth can also do is that it can remind you that you are, in a sense, the star of your spiritual journey. You are the whatever guru, saints or cardinals or deacons or dwarfs or whatever may exist. Ultimately, your spiritual path is about you. It is your journey to self-fulfillment, self-understanding, and I think it's very important that there be an ethical component to anything that we say is spiritual. Not moral, not arbitrary, not unbendable rules or wanting to prevent others from having fun. That's more moralistic. Ethics is, what is the right thing for me to be doing in this time? What really is the right thing for me to be doing? That's ethics. What is the right way for me to treat people? What is a philosophy of life that has genuine equanimity to it? So Venus highlights all these things, and I think it might be an awesome time to travel to somewhere you've already been and really loved and haven't been there for a while. A very important part of travel is going back to the places that you made some kind of a life transition in and seeing what they're like now, 5, 10, 20, 30 years later. The going back to is the retrograde, and the love is Venus, and the distance is implied in the ninth house, which is Leo. And I would say make it something special without a lot of high expectations. And though this is not for everyone, I do suggest that people learn how to go places alone without anyone influencing them. When they wake up in the morning, what are you going to do? You wake up and you're in the middle of Siberia or you're in Paris or you're in Hong Kong, I think of travel as being like nobody's going to tell you what to do or even influence. You just do whatever you fucking feel like it that day without having to discuss it. So this is a great setup for adventures. It is a great setup for taking your personal healing mission with you because Taurus is a representative of your sixth house. Taurus is also, Venus is rather a representative of your sixth, and Venus is also a representative of your 11th, your friends, the benefits that you get from associations with people, very much a highlighted theme when Venus is in the picture. You will make friends immediately. I don't recommend making extensive plans when you travel. I think it's fair to go somewhere where you maybe know one person, maybe not even know, have a reservation for a couple of nights somewhere, and then get your information locally where you are. Find out what you want to do when you're there, not in some concept, through whatever website or things that set up expectations or all this. Sag is good at being freewheeling, but humans are not that good at being freewheeling and letting themselves just have a completely unplanned experience. So that's something that is on the docket. Let's see, what is the activity in the 10th. Your 10th is Virgo. That's professional. So let's get a quick look at Mercury retrogrades this year. So we get a Mercury retrograde starts December 29th. These Mercury retrogrades are very important for you to make professional plans. Mercury's retrograde conjunct Venus in Taurus. Venus in Cap, second house. That looks highly productive for stepping up your game financially as regards your professional life. Also, along a very similar note, your travel experiences can also have quite a bit of that, a bit of being fruitful professionally and financially. So Mercury retrograde ends on January 18th. That's it's a very exciting and powerful transformational chart. Again, emphasizing making good financial decisions, which really for you is a matter of self-esteem. The next Mercury retrograde takes place in Taurus. They're in Earth signs this year. So stay close to the ground. The dirt, the mountains, the trees, fabrics you like the textures of, cups that you like drinking out of, the luxuries that mean the most to you. You don't need every luxury, but there are some people who always like to have a good cigar in the house. There are some people who always like to have three kinds of very high quality chocolate. Something. Stick to that. So that's another exciting one. The Mercury retrograde in that case is commencing not conjunct Venus, but conjunct the moon to the degree. Okay, that retrograde ends in Taurus. And then the August Mercury retrograde, this one starts in Virgo, and it lands in Virgo. So here's my assessment of this, is that the first, well, 9-10 months lead up to something. And when the sun enters Virgo, your 10th house, on August 23rd, that is the time to tighten up your professional plans. Now, Mars is going to have been there for a while. Mercury is going to have been there for a while. Pallas Athene, the goddess of strategy, is going to have been there for a while. It's not like you start in August. It's something you're doing all the time. but there is a there's almost like a miracle of strategy, a revelation of how to go about this very complicated matter that we're finding ourselves trapped in the middle of, which is the constantly shifting ground of the internet. That if we realized that for what it was, we would think this is just so foobar. I can't even believe I can deal with this. But you get an angle. You get this is a chart of a breakthrough of some kind. August 23rd, round about there. Doesn't have to be that day. Round about there. The whole summer time of experimentation with this and just finding your way to the right game plan for your vocational calling, which is about expressing your abundant talent and all that you have to contribute to the world. All right, well, this has been a lovely outline for the Sag readings I'm about to do. I'm happy to correspond with you. If you have any thoughts or questions, efc@planetwaves.net. If I don't answer right away, just write again a day later. Thank you for being a Planet Waves customer, possibly subscriber. We value and appreciate your business and mostly your trust. All right. Happy birthday. Lots of love. Give the Great Attractor a kiss for me. And bye for now.